Most colleges today ask you to leave your faith at the front door. But at Northwest University in Kirkland, their door is wide open. Listen as NU's Provost, Dr. Sarah Drivdahl, describes how their approach to academics encompasses the whole person.
Christian, higher education has many different purposes, but I would say the most important thing that a university can do is to help students find their call and serve Christ to their fullest potential. And that is something that Northwest Universities and the Ivy League are doing, that we are so good at helping students figure out who they are, learn the information they need, become the people they need to be to really advance the kingdom of God. And when I'm in a classroom at Northwest University, we get to talk about not just this topic, but we get to talk about how Christ relates to that topic. We get to teach the whole person.
NU's application deadline for fall classes has been extended to June 1st. A Christ-centered college experience is still possible, and generous scholarships are still available. Apply today at northwestu.edu.
An effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure.
Still in all, looks like the best effort we've seen thus far.
Hail to the chief.
You like that?
Why? Why?
I don't hear any thinking going on in there.
This is the Brian Suits Show.
You're listening to a best of the Brian Suits Show.
Dan Newhouse, 4th District Republican from Eastern Washington. How are you doing today?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Dan Newhouse, third generation Yakima farmer, a graduate of the Washington State University for your 4th District of the state of Washington, Republican. What problem? Why do you have a problem with grizzlies eating babies and cows and stuff?
Well, call me unreasonable. My go Cougars. Thanks for the shout out for WSU. But grizzlies are fine. They have a place in this world just like any other creature, but there's a problem. But the problem I have is that this administration has heard from the people of North Central Washington loud and clear in multiple public meetings. Overwhelmingly, people in that part of the state have made it clear to this administration they don't want grizzly bears introduced into their region. And that's my problem. I don't have anything against the bears themselves, but I think that Washington, D.C. should listen to the people who will be most impacted by this decision. So that's my problem.
Now, you remember the Appropriations Committee, so I don't know if you have your eyes on this or not, but what do they do in Montana? If a grizzly bear DNA or whatever, if it's shown in postmortem that a grizzly bear ate a cow, is there a fund to remunerate the farmer, the rancher for that? Or what do they do? Just say, oh, well, sucks to be you?
Well, I've asked that question, actually. In fact, we had the Secretary of Agriculture in front of the Appropriations Committee just a couple weeks ago, and I asked them that. And I didn't get a clear answer as to what would be available to ranchers on the if they do have animals that are destroyed by the bears. You know, in some cases, we have that kind of a fund available for different instances of loss of animals. I'm not 100%. I can't tell you for sure that there's something in place for that.
And so, like, the reintroduction of wolves was overwhelmingly a good thing to bring that apex predator back. But grizzly bears are a bit different in that they're the largest animal in North America that actually actively hunts anything it wants, including human beings. And so did the environmental impact statement from the National Park Service and Fish and Wildlife and the rest of them, did they address bear on human eating?
Indirectly, I suppose you could say they did. They're putting together, this is an experimental population, and their plans for the management of the bears do offer actions available to property owners to take if there is a confrontation between humans and bears or livestock and bears.
Well, you can shoot them, right? You have the, if it's a threat to your life, you feel a threat, you can shoot it.
Yep. That's my understanding. Yes. And so there are provisions that allow that because of the nature of the management rule and the experimental population. But, why bring that upon us? Why should we have to deal with the aftermath of a tragedy? Why don't we prevent it in the first place?
So let me ask you, is the plan to come to the middle of downtown Sunnyside and open up a big cage and just let it go? Or were they going to, like, do it alpine? Or what? How do you reintroduce a bear that's never been in the Cascades and doesn't even have a grandfather that was in the Cascades?
Well, that's the thing. Over time, there have been bears in the North Cascades, absolutely. In fact, I think the latest one to be seen was back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s. So they do come and go out of Canada primarily, and there are bears once in a while in northern Washington. The problem is that there's not a great, it's not a great area for them to live. There's not a lot of food source, and the concern of the farmers and ranchers and members of the community, the North Central Washington, is they're going to come down to the valleys where there's apples, where there's cattle, where there's, you know, people's garbage or very attractive to bears. That, you know, they're big animals. They have to eat a lot.
They're big time opportunity eaters too. And so, you got to work for your dinner if you're going to, if you can rely on deer. But if you're going to rely on apples falling on the ground or free garbage, then you're going to walk back to Sunnyside and camp out at a dumpster.
Well, the easiest path of least resistance. I think and that's what the people up there are concerned with. They don't want to have to worry about their kids waiting at a bus stop or their cattle that are on range and having to deal with wolves and cougars and now grizzly bears. They're not open a cage. They're going to airlift them in. That's my understanding.
The thing is, a black bear from Salton to Tenino, you clap your hands and a black bear will run away. A grizzly bear has no natural predators. It's afraid of nothing. It doesn't know that's a gun, a bang stick you're holding. It's afraid of nothing, and you smell delicious. And that's the experience of people in Montana and the rest of the, like, even hikers, where they come around the corner and the advice about look bigger and be loud. You're just waving your hand saying, I'm soft on the outside, crunchy on the inside. Come eat me, and the bear will oblige.
Come get me. Yeah, and the thing is, these bears have a tremendous range, 500 to 1,000 miles. So just because they're dropping them outside of Okanagan doesn't mean they won't head to other parts of the state looking for food. That's exactly what they'll do.
Yeah, they need a huge range. Can I pivot to Alejandro Mayorkas?
Oh, sure.
He was in front of you guys. And do you think this impeachment has got any legs? Is it going to go anywhere? Or is it just... Are we, just be honest, is it just performative?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's a legitimate effort on the part of Congress to hold accountable this administration for abject failure with their policies governing our border. You know, we've had over the last 3 years, more than the entire state of Washington come into our country and border crossings on the southern and northern borders. And I think that the willful ignoring of laws, the actual changing of procedures, rules, and regulations from the previous administration in this one led to the crisis that we're seeing in illegal immigrants, illegal migrants, drug trafficking, human trafficking, the crime associated with all that. And so, we passed it out of the House. It's in the hands of the Senate. They've got to deal with it here very soon. And so I think it's a very legitimate effort. It's not just grandstanding or politics that we're trying to get an advantage over this administration. It's holding them accountable.
Well, and as you know, you represent a district centered around Yakima that has one of the most dense, longtime Mexican-American communities in America. So famous in Mexico, in fact, that I forgot his name, the president of Mexico that... Before he landed in D.C., he landed in Yakima. He spoke in Yakima. This is like 15 years ago. And a friend of mine, a sixth-generation guy up in Sela, sixth-generation farmer, said it's not that they're coming from Mexico. It's that we don't know they're coming because they rely on that labor. And even though they're sixth-generation owners and American citizens, they rely on that labor. So we, you know, at some point we need it, but they all had work permits for a long time. And so it's funny that the myth, the Democratic myth that, oh, all the Hispanics are against tightening the border. I mean, I know people that rely on this labor for their farm, but they just want to know who's coming in the country.
Well, farmers are just like everybody else. We recognize that the immigrant labor is very important to our industry, agricultural in particular, in this instance, and many others. But as citizens of this country concerned about our safety and our welfare, we want to make sure that people coming into our country come legally and that they are coming for the right reasons. And that's the problem. We cannot have just open borders with where anybody coming in from any country in the world, and we have no idea why they're coming, what their intentions are when they get here. You know, we, as farmers, we feel just as vulnerable when that happens as anybody else. We want a legal source of workers for the agricultural industry. And that's been one of my biggest priorities the whole time I've been in Congress, and I'll continue to work on that.
Yeah, I hate the transition to the term migrant. They're still, my mom is a legal alien. My mom came from tunneled out of Canada legally and was a resident alien here, and she always said illegal alien. So, all right, well, you're down there in Sunnyside. Are you growing that Sunnyside asparagus?
That's starting to come now. We used to have it on our farm. We don't today, but that grows very well in the Yakima Valley.
So yeah, my friends the Camphices are there right off 82 and with their asparagus farm. So I'll tell them you said hi. Can I say that?
Absolutely.
All right, Fourth District Congressman Dan Newhouse, there from D.C. Thanks for have a productive day. And we'll keep an eye out for the Grizzlies. Let's keep them out. So, all right, thanks a lot. Have a good day.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show.
Right now, let's do a checking of your texting, because someone here has proven why Kamala said, let me repeat that. 360 says she said, if you have paid on fill-in-the-blank loans for 20 to 25 years, they will be completely forgiven. Does she mean loans that are structured over 20 to 25 years, or what she actually said was that they had been paid on them for 20 to 25 years? Well, let's go back to her, because she did repeat it. So
your loans will be completely forgiven, regardless of your income, and even if you did not graduate.
I wish you'd repeat that.
So I'm going to repeat that. If you've paid undergraduate loans for more than 20 years or graduate loans for more than 25 years, those loans will be completely forgiven regardless of your income.
That's quite a proviso there. Regardless of your income, you might have done very, very, you might be Elon flipping Musk. And this is the part that for those of you that like work for a living, use your hands or whatever, you must be feeling really great about April 15th.
Right? Elon.
It's nuts, regardless of income.
Elon.
What reasonable person would disagree with a ceiling on that and say, okay, if you're making $200,000 a year or $100,000 a year, we'll reduce your interest rate or something like that. But she blathers on.
And even if you did not graduate. And forgiveness will be automatic for the vast majority of the 25 million people that we believe will benefit from this approach.
And this will never be implemented like his last one that the Supreme Court shut up, because it is about the performance. It's about the gesture. It's not about really getting the young people to stop hating the orange man.
In the 2020 NBC News exit poll, candidate Biden led former President Trump by 24 percentage points among voters under 30. But an NBC survey in January had President Biden up by just 8 percentage points among that group.
But wait, there's more.
Another poll last month showed Mr. Trump ahead by 18 points among voters under 30.
That scares the crap out of him. Plus, uncommitted. Plus, Arabs in Dearborn, Michigan, Arab Democrats in Dearborn, Michigan. And so that's how you get throwing Israel under the bus and making this this representation that you can suddenly forgive loans like that, just wave a hand. But you can't get aid. You can't drop MREs from a plane over Gaza. But anyway, it's ludicrous. Okay, so here's the deal. Talking about, we had a parallel, contrasting stories. You had the drug addict woman whose mother was going to petition to have custody of her grandson. The mother knew that and spitefully kidnapped her grandson and killed him, beat his head in, and was covered in his spattered blood on her clothes, left him in on side of the road on I-5 in Pierce County. Her own son named Ariel Fernandez or Gonzalez, and he's dead. Then you had the woman in Kitsap, Bremerton area, who kidnapped her own son by the single dad who had custody had the kid with the grandma in that case, his own mom. And in this case, the outcome was way, way, way different. Far, far better.
The Kitsap County Sheriff's Office said the boy was abducted by his mother in Bremerton. She's now in custody. Como's Karina Vargas was there as the boy and his father were reunited.
Good news, though. We have her in custody and we have Teddy as well.
You do? Oh, my gosh. Where's my son?
Our cameras caught the moment.
And they do reunite. It's a great story. It's what Amber Alerts are for. You got that one on Sunday morning, and the vehicle was found, and the boy was fine. But Casey, that's what we were talking about yesterday when I was pointing out that there's something just way different right now. And if you haven't been around an addict or have to navigate around an addict, then and that's what I sense the legislators that were saying, oh no, it's just better. Washington State has a keep the addict in the scene policy, which was just insane to me. So there's no removal for drug use. Because in the state of Washington, that's not enough.
There are still many unanswered questions about the death of 4-year-old Ariel Garcia. Police say his mother violently killed him on the day she was supposed to give up custody of him to her mother. State Representative Travis Kotur wants to know if the state could have intervened sooner. Kotur proposed a bill this year that would have ordered child removal from situations where a parent is using drugs. But it's a divisive issue.
I want to be very clear. Substance use alone is not a reason for removal, nor should it be.
Opponents say...
Nor should it be. Oh, okay. You've never been around what we're talking about. And I forgot her name, that legislator who's quoted saying that. Okay, so let me read this from Casey from Puyallup. Something really hit home that was noted by Mr. Suits. I feel the need to share for reasons involving recent events with small children and drug-addicted parents. He said that alcoholics are different from drug addicts. This is very, very true, and I feel the need to touch on this. Bullet point one, my dad was a drunk, the worst kind, DUIs, DVs, lost jobs, jail time, broken home. He went too far 7 days a week, got me kicked off a baseball team. I never saw him sober ever. My mom was a drug addict. She never saw jail time, not once, but at least lost custody of us after years of torment where we were given to my dad. My dad had morals. He would beat me if I was caught with alcohol or drugs and ban me from having troubled friends. He would use force, not condoning violence here, but it was a healthy fear. My mom turned my older sister into a drug-addicted prostitute, shared her drugs and alcohol with her. She started at about 13 years old. My dad and I fought regularly each night that he drank, but he's never risked our lives. I had a problem with him coming home drunk. He was and was a spitfire towards him. My mom nodded out on opioids while behind the wheel of a car, nearly killing both my sister and my niece. She nodded often, especially when driving us to school as a kid. My dad would hand me the keys of his car to drive him places when he drank. Small town as a 13-year-old, heck yes, I'll drive. Point four, my dad provided a roof over our head. Yes, we were dirt poor, but we were dry and safe. My mom left us in a tent 4 days at a time without supervision, sometimes forgetting to leave us with food. I was forced to steal from other camps and stores. My dad beat a man for bruising my arm. My mom left me with a registered sex offender. Granted, when he learned she wasn't coming back, he called the sheriff. Drugs versus alcohol, both are bad in their own way, but drugs, I didn't have a childhood until my dad got out of jail when I was in the fifth grade. An alcoholic dad made sure I would play basketball. A drug-addicted mom left me with dealers. I want drugs off the streets. We need to focus on mental health and addiction. Parents who are drug addicts need to lose their children. I believe every word of that, by the way. So thanks for posting that. And I did retweet it yesterday, so you can read that. And follow Casey from Puyallup on the Twitter machine if you're on the Twitter machine. And his Twitter handle is at a random wingnut. And obviously, that's so stark, it can only be true. Because unless you've been around a drug addict, you can't even make that up. That's why I believe that. So thank you for that.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am something KTTH. Time for a checking of your texting. The Giant Buffalo Wild Wings by, I don't know what they call it now, where the Jailblazers play.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be Rose Arena.
That I don't one place.
Anyway, it's closed because of the vagrants, vagrants and the poop and the whole thing. And the city of Portland say, oh, it wasn't us, it's you. And they were like, no. Our patrons don't come here anymore because their windows get broken. And
not impressed.
858 says in LA, restaurants have just started charging security fees that are as high as 4.5%. Not kidding. Aren't you glad you tunneled out? That is an insane fee. And that's one reason to avoid that city and those kind of taxes. If Seattle ever does that, charging an excise fee just for the security you're giving me, then I'm going to charge you. I'm going to send you an invoice for one of those wing glove windows that the courteous car prowler broke on mine. So I recommend that for all car prowlers, by the way. 509 says, I've heard more intelligent, factual conversations between my 4-year-old son and his friends. How is this stuff even greenlit by major TV networks? I watched Bill Nye, the Engineer Guy, Magic School Bus, and I'm now a scientist, but these people are actively making third graders dumber. I award them no points, and they may God have mercy on their souls.
We've got a solar eclipse. We've got the earthquake.
She ran down the hallway.
The rapture is here.
The rapture's here. And then also I learned that the cicadas are coming.
Cicadas.
All those things together would maybe lead one to believe that, you know, either climate change exists.
That's more
or something
point.
Is really
or going
return.
For daytime TV, it's already a desert. I don't know how The View does. I'm not going to tell women how to be insulted. They've invented that pretty well themselves. But I would be insulted if that was put in front of me. If it was, you know, if that was like the middle-aged single dad show or whatever, it would be a hell of a lot more interesting. But if there was someone that dumb on the show saying the cicadas, the earthquakes, now the eclipse, you're telling me there's not global warming?
We've got a solar eclipse. We've
she
got the earthquake. Ran down the hallway.
The rapture is here.
The rapture's here. And then
the cicadas are coming.
Everyone is now dumber for having listened to it.
So there you go. So, yeah, I don't know. But good observation. Thank you very much.
From the 206, I'm not totally up to speed on cicadas, but this year is the first time, Brian, in almost 200 years that the 7-year and 17-year cicadas emerge
coincide
at the exact same time.
That would be the most annoying sound ever. Is it, though? So there's that.
What does it all mean?
And you know what? I mean, like I said, I don't want to get historical tangenty. But
yes, you do.
At the high tide, when Cortez was taking Mexico City, the Mohicans, as they were called at the time, the Aztecs were believed in this, you know, mystical, corporeal, you know, magical world. They unveiled a guy dressed in a giant owl suit. He was mystically, the priest had said it was basically the A-bomb of the Aztec world. You send the Quetzal owl warrior out there, we win. Because in all the wars they'd had up to that point, the other side had surrendered. When guy dressed as an owl came out, they were so awe-inspired that they put their weapons down. And they said, well, that's it, we lose. And so guess what? They send the Quetzal owl out there. And you know that scene where Indiana Jones just shoots the sword fighter? That's what happened.
Oh, yeah, and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And so the effectiveness of owl feathers against muskets, Spanish muskets, not so much.
That belongs in a museum.
So I didn't get an insight into anyone's great introspection. I got insight into that one aspect of humans who are seeing something awe-inspiring that is entirely explainable. The one ludicrous thing I read from the psychologist at the University of California, Irvine, about how in the past wars have stopped and things like that the eclipse just over North America would somehow change the nature of man or whatever. I mean, okay, you know what? Try sending a guy out in an owl suit.
See, I can hear Chief Seattle crying out to us.
See if that works. I mean, like you say, I will always defend Western culture, Western civilization, and say, you know why we know that? Because we wrote it down. We weren't sitting around a campfire passing it on in our oral tradition. And then in the time of the bald albino beaver, did the great shaking of the earth happen? And whatever. That's not history. That's the campfire story is what that is.
So, I thought the eclipse was pretty special.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
Coleman Hughes is a great, great budding intellectual, a great thinker, and a guy who doesn't believe, the African-American guy, grew up in Puerto Rican background, he believes in colorblindness and believes that all the crap he bought in 2020 can be explained when you examine it a little closer.
Yeah, he's on the interview circuit promoting his new book, The End of Race Politics.
And you watch one of the things the Democrats are afraid of is that their convention is in July or something in Chicago, that they're going to use the BLM model to claim victimhood. This is all because Genocide Joe continues to genocide the Gazan Palestinian genocide wanters and all that. So we'll get to that here in just a second. But can you imagine that at 3 a.m. outside of Nancy Pelosi's house? If you hear that, then this makes way more sense now.
And Rafa, what he would do. But I'll tell you what he has been doing. And people should know this, and especially try to say this to all the people in front of my house in the middle of the night and the rest. The mm-hmm. president has been advocating for humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians.
And she doesn't mean the house in D.C. She means the house where, what's his name? What's her husband's name?
That one dude.
Frank Pelosi, whatever. She means the Pacific Heights house. That has Secret Service protection when she's there and not when she's not there.
Paul Pelosi.
So anyway, she's sounding personal there on that. And so this is from the Joe Rogan podcast. Coleman Hughes, who has a podcast himself, no military experience, but he's right about this, about the war in Gaza. He's 97% right about this.
What is different about this war than all other wars? If you ask the question, what is unique about this war? What is different about this war than all other wars? It's not the civilian death toll. The ratio of combatants to civilians is, I think it's better than the American armies was when we got ISIS out of Mosul. That was like 10,000 civilians dead to kill 4,000 ISIS. This is 19,000 civilians dead to kill 13,000. What's unique about this war, unlike every other war that I could think of, is you have an army in Hamas that has perfected the art of embedding itself and meshing itself with civilians so that you cannot hit them without hitting the people around them.
And I'll double down on this and tell him this. He's correct on this without even knowing it, because what we did in early 2004 and then in November 2004 in Fallujah, especially in November, with Phantom Fury 2 and the Marine Corps and the Army cleared Fallujah, was we cleared the civilians out. You know why? Because none of the Al-Qaeda guys were Iraqis. They were fat Jordanians and spoiled Saudis, and but they were not Iraqis. They came there to get their Kill an American safari on, and no one liked them. And so when we said, if you're here in town, we can't guarantee your safety, there you can go north, you can go south, but you can get out of town. They were not blocked by these idiot fake terrorists. And Iraqis left. If they needed a truck or a ride, they got it, and they left Fallujah. So we depopulated Fallujah. It was way easier because these idiots didn't understand. They didn't think of forcibly keeping people in front of them the way Hamas has worked into their field manual on that. And so for the Israelis to do what they're doing, where you have a civilian population that's not even trying to escape, they're in on the protection racket. I don't know. But why would any sane person stay there? Why did kids run around at 3? Why did parents allow their kids to run around Baghdad at 3 a.m. in the middle of a firefight? Well, because they didn't think anything bad would happen until something bad happens. But anyway, back with it.
Other armies have done this.
And what he's saying, but there are people that say this at MSNBC. It just doesn't get on the air. This is not the official narrative.
But none have perfected it to the extent that Hamas has. No army that I know of in military history has had 15 years to build 300 miles of tunnel underneath a city that they don't use to shelter the civilians, but they use to shelter themselves so that they can operate right under a kindergarten, right under a mosque. So this is a challenge no army has faced. And so that's what makes this war different.
And he's absolutely correct on that, that we did not only in a few situations were we interoperating with civilians on the battlefield that closely, like Sadr City. In general, we were dealing with empty cities, or we emptied the cities. And urban warfare is fairly new. And, you know, in the Civil War, there were no fights for Philadelphia, or Atlanta. You burnt Atlanta as you went through, but you didn't defend it. You didn't fight for it mainly because of the functionality of the weapons. Single shot weapons don't lend themselves. What's led to more city fighting in the past 110 years is smaller weapons being easily carried, maneuvered around the city. So it is fairly new, but that's a bit too. That's so esoteric. That could be on the Tuesday 10th break podcast today. I don't know. It's AM 770 KTTH.
Lots of luck in this trip to the moon. I mean, I don't know.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show.
The most consequential technology in America. What's the most popular social app and music service? This is not what I wouldn't call it that. Over under Grindr, Greg. What, I don't think we can measure that. So what's the most popular social app and music service? YouTube.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I guess, except I go to it for Bobcat Attacks Man in Driveway. Not for Out of Touch by the Rolling Stones. But then again, when I play bumpers off this computer, I have a playlist called Bumpers, which we never go to enough, frankly. It's really good. So anyway, YouTube is the most influential. I think these creators, it screws you, I think, just me. But as a go-to for like seeing an idea for dinner or a better way to prepare pork belly or whatever, YouTube is the way to go. I mean, there's a couple channels. The one that where he gets it is a TV guy, Gordon Ramsay, who before that apparently was a food guy. He can yell at you equally through the YouTube or the TV. He gets it. He just says, "What's the best way to produce perfect rice?" Then he goes, "Jasmine rice, do this." And in a minute and a half, he improved boiling rice in my life by 3,000%. And there's food channels that are on a regular, TV, but you can go on the YouTube and you can say better pork belly or whatever. And it just, you know, they get my eyeballs. That's all they're doing. More and more people on your various podcasting and stuff. So that's something that you got to do. Text app 800-465-8770. And you can get the award-winning Brian Suit Show podcast, the award-winning Jason Rantz Show, the award-winning 10th Break from the Brian Suit Show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And here's the last gasp from Twitter. This is a friend of mine, Noah Pollack from Free Beacon. So for a real smart guy, because the Biden administration is taking Hamas's side and taking Russia's side. The Bloomberg headline, U.S. slams strikes on Russian oil refineries as risk to oil markets. Okay, we're boycotting their oil, and we're backing, with a lot of money, the guys that are finally making inroads and are thinking a little more logistically than the Russians and hitting Russian oil refineries. So Noah Pollack says, the Biden doctrine is basically no U.S. allies shall win a war. Indeed, the United States will now fund both sides of the conflicts out of this commitment to strategic ambivalence. White House political operatives with no relevant experience or record of success will use American power to micromanage the military tactics of our allies, including target selection and timing of maneuvers to ensure they comply with the domestic political interests of the Democratic Party. I've been tracking that. The foremost consideration in war is the electoral prospects of Democrats. If an ally's fight for survival risks complicating Democrat campaigns, then it is inherently illegitimate, probably a war crime and genocide, and there must be an immediate humanitarian ceasefire to protest incumbent Democrats during the election year. And again, this is just because Democratic Muslims wrote uncommitted in the primary ballot, and they're terrified of a unofficial survey they just did with a bunch of undecided voters who voted for Biden in 2020. The White House even allowed this to go on MSNBC, which is what this is, by the way. That they can call the executive producer of MSNBC or Rashida Jones, and they can say, let's go ahead and not put those undecided people saying Biden is a disaster to the economy. Let's not put that on in the morning before a 3.5% annual inflation rate is announced.
I think he's been absolutely disastrous for the economy.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So raise your hand if you think President Trump's policies on the economy would be better for your family personally. Raise your hand.
They all raise their hand.
That is everybody.
You get the idea there. Now, because he saw 200,000 people in Michigan raise their hand that Israel's bad, Hamas are good, Israel's committing a genocide. What Hamas did was a field trip out to various kibbutz to see if their knives were sharp enough. Instead of just talking to those people like adults and saying, you are supporting a murderous safari into Israel. How can you back them? How can you deny that Israel has a right to wipe out the people that did that? Not the civilians, but the people that are trying to wipe out are hiding behind the civilians, but they can't do that. And so instead you get Biden on Univision thinking for some reason that Hispanics are going to hear about this, or Hispanic Jews apparently are in the lurch or on the bubble on this. And so he says,
what I will tell you is I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those four three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out.
See, he's all genocide-y and all that.
Allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country.
So anyway, good job, Noah. You nailed it on that one. And every organ of the organism has to parrot this, including Lloyd Austin, in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee, as questioned by Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas.
I want to address what the protesters raised earlier. Is Israel committing genocide in Gaza?
And by the way, did everybody see that? That a mob of trespassers invaded the Capitol and stopped the Senate from working by blocking off the cafeteria, hitting them where it hurts the most. So has anyone called them democratic or undemocratic or a riot or whatever? They were blocking you from your legal ability to go into the Capitol cafeteria. Okay, I know it's not exactly registering or confirming the presidential electoral votes, but that's ceremonial too. Eating is for real.
Senator Cotton, we don't have any evidence of genocide being created.
So that's a no. Israel's not committing genocide in Gaza.
We don't have evidence of that, to
Thank
my
you.
Knowledge.
Because there is none.
Yeah. Better than Director Burns and Director Haynes did last month at the Intelligence Committee when they dodged that question. You stand accused by those protesters of greenlighting genocide. Would you like to respond to that accusation?
What I would say, Senator Cotton, from the very beginning is that we committed to help assist Israel in defending its territory and its people by providing security assistance.
And so this is totally on brand, but even at least Austin still has a shred of integrity and can say that no matter how well it rhymes with Biden, you can't hide, you're committing genocide, it's just not factually true. You may as well say, rhyme something with polar bear and Gaza. You know, I don't know. AM 770 KTTH.